This meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will come to order at 1:35 p.m. here in Belt's Room 105. Today is Wednesday, February 8th, in the year 2023. Members present are Senator Dunbar, myself, Senator Bjorkman, Senator Gray Jackson, and Senator Merrick. I believe Senator Bishop will be along shortly. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to recognize our recording secretary, Carrie Cooper-Ryder, and LIO moderator, Jake Wolf, today. Today, we will continue our exploration of workforce issues in Alaska. With us on the Teams Hub this afternoon, we have Stephanie Queen, city manager from the great city of Soldotna, Terry Eubank, city manager from the beautiful city of Kenai, and here in the room, we have Jeff Rogers, finance director of the city and borough of Juneau. They are here today to speak with us about the workforce challenges from their perspective of municipalities. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. First up, we have Ms. Queen. Ms. Queen, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. I'm Stephanie Queen with the City of Soldotna.
Thank you very much. And do you prefer that the committee ask you questions throughout the presentation or wait till the end?
I'd be comfortable being interrupted throughout. I can see you guys fairly well. I'd just speak up, and if someone wanted to interrupt at any time, I'm comfortable with that. That'd be great.
Very well. Thank you. I'd like to announce for the record that we have been joined by Senator Bishop. No worries. Ms. Queen, please begin.
Well, thank you. For the invitation. I'm happy to be joining you today to talk about something that I've spent quite a bit of time over the past 4 or 5 months thinking about. In fact, when Senator Bjorkman and I spoke on Friday, I said the timing's perfect because I'd actually been preparing for a work session with my own city council at 4:30 today on this very topic, where I'm presenting strategies that we can take at the local level to enhance our competitiveness in recruitment and retention. And so I'm glad that local government can share and be a part of this conversation with you. I wanted to note out at the beginning that Soldotna as a municipality is not yet in crisis hiring and retaining employees. And so I am going to present some challenges and some challenges we anticipate coming up over the next several years, but I'm sensitive to the fact that many of my peers around the state are experiencing this issue much more acutely. And so if anything, I think Soldotna might be kind of one of the better positioned municipalities being able to address workforce issues, but that's still instructive, I hope, because it's something that I'm pretty concerned about to recommend some changes moving forward that we can continue providing the level of service that our council and our community members expect from us. Next slide, please. So brief introduction about myself. I was born and raised in Kenai, just down the street where Terry is sitting now. I went outside for college and I moved back to the state in 2007 after grad school. I landed just briefly in Anchorage for about a year, and then my husband's job brought us back to the peninsula. And at the time, I hired on with the city of Soldotna as its planning director, spent 10 years doing economic development and planning. And then for the past 5 years, I've been the city manager. So just coming up on your anniversary this month, the city manager and 15 years total with the city of Soldotna. Soldotna, as you might know, is kind of centrally located in the Kenai Peninsula. We're a really small municipal footprint, 7.4 square miles and about 4,400 residents. But we serve kind of a broader service area with our neighbors, Kenai, just to the north. And we're kind of a hub for local government, education, services, and certainly retail. So a lot of concentrated activity here in the city. But as an entity, we're about 75 full-time employees. We're a home rule municipality with a manager form of government. And operating is about $15 million a year. That's mostly revenue from sales tax. So we have a 3% sales tax we levy. And that last year, our most recent fiscal year, provided about $9.6 million of our revenue. Our property taxes over the last year was just over $320,000. We've got a very low mill rate. Half of one mill is what we bring in from property tax. So we're very sales tax driven, and I think that probably informs is informed by some of our decisions to focus on some of the quality of life and economic development projects we have. So on slide three, I wanted to give a breakdown of our employees. You can see, maybe unsurprisingly, our police department is our largest department with 17 full-time employees. Our second biggest department, this is true in terms of people, but also budget, is Parks and Recreation. So we own and operate an Olympic-size ice rink. We're getting ready to construct an indoor turf field house. We've got campgrounds and large event parks, and it's a very big piece of what the municipal services that we provide to the community. Streets and airport maintenance shop, that's one of our larger departments as well. But I think one of the takeaways I wanted to share with this slide, pretty flat organization. So you can see departments like my department, planning and economic development, you know, IT, those are two-person departments. And we've got really high functioning, really professional level employees in our leadership that perform at a very high level. So if we were a basketball team, I would say we're that team that everyone underestimates on paper, and then they get to the big game and surprise everyone with what we can accomplish. So we're a high performing organization, but we're small. And I think one of the concerns I have moving forward is that we're more sensitive to changes in workforce. We can't easily absorb, can't always easily cross train because we're a fairly small organization. Next slide. So the reason I started thinking about this, diving into this project, which is resulting in my presentation here to you, but also to our council later tonight, is that we had noticed some changes. I think traditionally we had not had to invest much resources into recruitment. And maybe we took it a little bit for granted, but we would post jobs on our website. Typically, prospective employees would find us. Job description, and that's about it. And generally that worked out for us. And I think that's in part because of just some of the natural advantages with our location. You know, we're on the road system, easily accessible. There's a lot of other employees. We've got a good school system and healthcare opportunities. So I think we just naturally benefit from those things. But we started to see changes. So we've had fewer applicants for positions. Oftentimes getting to the end of our closing period or first review, and the hiring managers feel they had potentially qualified applicants to interview. So we've seen the number go down. Anecdotally, it feels like the quality of the experience and the applications we're seeing has decreased. We're positions vacant longer. And so we've gotten away entirely from having closing dates. We now just advertise all positions as open until filled to save ourselves the extra, you know, process of re-advertising if we don't have a successful candidate in that first pass. Seeing job seekers that are just in a much stronger bargaining position. And so we will get to the point where we're moving forward and someone who's we considered a high value candidate will drop out because they've gotten a different job. We've had a few instances where they don't even show up to the interview, and maybe they didn't even give us a heads up about that. So we're seeing people in a much stronger position when it comes to the applicants, the prospective candidates being in a strong position. So we're making some changes. We've lowered many of our minimum qualifications. We used to, you know, a lot of our positions do require advanced education, but are flexible in terms of what a prospective successful employee might look like. So we're having positions sit longer, we're lowering minimum qualifications, and so far that's been adequate, but cause for concern. Next slide, please. We've got a couple difficult to fill positions recently. So this photo several years ago, we've got a really excellent community college. Campus, the college has their Kenai River campus. They're affiliated with UAA in Anchorage, but they've got a process technology degree program, which is really successful in pairing our residents with industry jobs. We took them through a tour of our wastewater treatment plant, which I think is fascinating. If you've got a local government that's And we try to get all of our council members and on that tour, but we were taking them through this tour of the building. And I wanted to just point this out. Utility, we have had a lot of turnover. We're just a 6-person department. So that's our manager, a lead operator, and 4 additional operators that run our water and wastewater system. And we've had high turnover. We've had difficulty getting patients that we need in order to make sure that we're complying with our regulatory environment. And 2 of the utility operator positions recently, one was vacant for about 5 months, one was vacant for 8 months. Thankfully, they weren't at the same time. Otherwise, we would have been potentially in a bind. And I'm hearing this discussion about utilities with my peers around the state as well, having to get creative about making sure that we've got adequate oversight, whether that looks like partnering with our neighboring municipalities close to us or even additional contracted, for example, an engineering firm. But I think recruitment, that's not a job that I fill. That's a position that our council hires, but it required almost a full year and 3 separate advertisings to get our city clerk hired. Moving forward, we're going to have a lot of changeover at our department director level. So that I anticipate being challenging, as well as police officers, which I'm sure is not a surprise to anyone in the room. Next slide, please. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I just share it as part of my understanding that what we were seeing at the local level is in fact rooted in some changes at the state and certainly nationally. Robinson, who's the lead of the research division, Alaska Workforce Division, he's going to present tonight to our council on this information. But I just wanted to point out, as you're probably aware, you know, we've had a decade of net out migration. So fewer folks coming to the state than leaving every year. We've got an aging workforce, and we're seeing the full effects of that. Really, for us, we're starting to see it the last couple of years, but really in the 5 years ahead. And I've got a slide showing some of those projections. But this worker just contributes to the challenges where there are simply not enough people to do the jobs that we have now or the jobs that we hope are created through economic growth moving forward. I know we're not alone in experiencing this challenge. Next slide. But it also, these challenges also contribute to retention because in this hyper-competitive market, it means that, you know, our own existing employees will have better opportunities by seeking out new employment. So if it's hiring bonuses or wage increases, it is also going to lead to retain employees. I'll spend a little bit of time in one of the upcoming slides talking about our retirement system. Currently, more than 70% of our workforce is in Tier 4 of the PERS system. So when I hired in February of 2008, almost all of our employees at the city at that time were in a defined benefit plan. Now that pendulum has shifted, and we're at north of 70% in the Tier 4 system. And over the next 5 to 10 years, of course, that percentage will continue to grow. And the city of Soldotna doesn't participate in Social Security, and we don't participate in a supplemental benefit system. So really, PERS is the only retirement option that our employees are going to have. Other than we do have a voluntary 457 plan, a deferred compensation plan, but currently the city doesn't provide an employer match into that. So employees can voluntarily save, but we're not at this point matching those funds.
Thank you. If we could just pause right here. Senator Merrick has a question for you.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. And Ms. Queen, thank you for being here. My question is about the Social Security and SBS participation. Is that a choice that the city made not to participate in those programs?
Thank you, Senator Merrick, for the question. I did not do a deep dive into those particular programs. It is my understanding of the city to join either of those programs in the past, and that maybe former city managers had explored that option. When I did my current thinking on retirement savings for employees, instead I focused on a voluntary match into a 457 plan as an alternative, but that was simply out of my belief something that was voluntary would be an approach that was more welcomed by our current employees rather than something that was mandatory. So I'd have to do a bit more research. I have been curious about this. I do believe that the Kenai Peninsula Borough, for example, participates in Social Security. I just wasn't able to connect with them earlier this week to kind of walk back that history and understand it better for myself. But that's an excellent question and one that I'm going to try and get additional information on.
Great. Thank you.
Please continue.
Great. Thank you. If we can go to slide number 8. I included this not as a critique of any of the generation. As a millennial myself, I cringe sometimes when I'm in conferences and they start talking about millennials. And in that situation, I sometimes voluntarily raise my hand and remind folks that the oldest of the millennials are now in their 40s. I did want to put the slide up because there was something mentioned in this article that struck me as interesting in that. Yeah, that employment now, they were talking about Generation Z, but I think it's maybe more broadly applicable that folks are seeing this relationship as transactional, as just a means to an end. And I've included in my slides here, as I mentioned, not as a criticism, or from a position of self-awareness, which is it didn't surprise me that that case, especially since the employer has really fundamentally changed as we got away from what looks like a pension-based system where people would come, and whether that's a pension in the private sector or in, you know, government or benefits, it doesn't surprise me that people are perceived as less loyal, because as we know, the mobility of Tier 4 is something that we've just been curious and had our eye on really since the changeover to that system. On the next slide, slide number 9, just share with you some of our projections about what's coming. We were in a maybe unique and fortunate position with our police department. Well, last year, we had been fully staffed for 7 years. So we had not done any recruitment in our police department for 7 years. And that resulted in us having a lot of stability, but also a very senior department. And so last year, the person in the photo on the left is our former police chief, Peter Molnarek. He retired after more than 30 years in public safety, 22 with the troopers and almost 10 with us at the city of Soldotna. And so we hired a new chief last year and two officers. We've started now to see that turn in our department. So we hired 3 in the department last year. Looking ahead, currently, there's 3 additional officers that we know have just shared with us their plans for transitioning out or retiring. And looking at age and service, we're expecting as many as 7 in that department over the next 5 years, which is 40% of our police department. And if you add in the 3 that we hired last year, it's closer to 60%. And that's just based on retirement eligibility. That doesn't include a state for family reasons or take a better job. So we are, I think it was nice while it lasted, that stability, but we're very much now going to be in a position, as many other departments and agencies are around the state, of focusing on this public safety recruitment. And there's, I've included the other departments as well. These numbers look small, you know, 4 people in a given year, but again, if you look back to our hierarchy of our department, that could be an entire department. So these numbers for retirement projections are concerning to me because, as I mentioned, they don't include just the natural turnover that we see in hiring we do. We're going to have to do a lot of hiring coming up. And the person in the right on the photo, I'll just point out, that's Lieutenant Dwayne Cant. He's been with us 32 years. He started his career with the Soldotna Police Department. And just last week, we started advertising his position in-house. So next slide, please.
Gary Jackson has a question for you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much for this presentation. I'm really learning a lot about your community. But what about a fire department? I don't see that listed anywhere. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, thank you for that question. We participate in a regional fire service area. So the city of Soldotna did have fire powers at one point, and then it was consolidated with our borough into a service area many decades ago. So we benefit from that partnership, and that's not one of the services we provide.
Please continue.
Great, thank you. Looking at slide 10, just a little bit more of the breakdown between our current workforce, our employees that are in the different tiers of the system. Maybe not, no big takeaways, but average salaries higher of our defined benefit per employees. They've obviously also been on average longer. I've got one employee who's been with us for 45 years. And so with those employees and just under 30% of our workforce compared to the 70% of our workforce who are now in tier four, the average years of service is 6. So we have a lot of new employees just been with us under a year or 1 or 2 years. But we do also have some longevity among tier four employees. I don't think we've got enough data, and we're not a big enough organization to know if the PERS 4 system contributed to folks leaving early, because we do have a fair number of employees who've been with us quite a long time, 15 years. So, but just share this current snapshot. It's evenly broken down too by our leadership. So of our 12 kind of higher level department heads and managers, 6 are in the defined benefit program, 6 are in PERS tier 4. The next slide. So understanding that something has changed and that the years ahead of us are not going to look like in terms of the number of recruitments we're having to do, our strategy employees, my team undertook the work of essentially looking at strategies that we could do at a local level that would be practical, effective, and give us some flexibility to adjust to what's coming. These are the 9 strategies that I'm going to speak to tonight to our council and ask them to consider over the next month or so. Things that we have had to do kind of on an ad hoc basis recently. We offered some recruitment bonuses, some relocation assistance. I think moving forward, those are going to be more standard. And so formalizing those programs, looking at paid parental leave. We had not done that in the past. That's a program that I think is going to be more important and more common. Looking at offering sabbaticals, just giving our department head level manager a break every once in a while. And then the two that are two of the bigger cost drivers for us, but I think are critical. One is looking at increasing our employer share of our employees' health insurance premiums. So we currently share the cost of that with employees. If you're an employee and you're in the employee-only coverage, they pay 10% of their monthly premium and the city picks up 90%. But for all other types of family coverage, it's currently an 80-20 split where the employee's paying 20% and we're paying 80%. And I think that to be competitive with our peers and what other municipalities are offering, we're going to have to increase our share of that cost. And the last bullet is what would be, I think, considered potentially in lieu of SBS or Social Security would be setting up and exploring a program where we're voluntarily matching employee contributions into a deferred compensation plan. And we could use our existing 457 plan administered by Mission Square, or we could explore other opportunities that might be more tax advantageous. But I think that's an it's an important piece of retirement savings that potentially we could offer to all of our employees, regardless of which tier of the PERS system they're in, recognizing that if you've worked for the city of Soldotna your whole career, you're really not, you won't have any Social Security to fall back on or to supplement those benefits. So I think that's going to be a really important piece of a strategy moving forward.
Thank you.
Next slide.
We do have a question from Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Chair Dorfman. And it's good to see you again, Ms. Queen. It's been some time. This is Senator Dunbar. So on this slide, actually on this on both those slides, the question kind of relates to both. You mentioned under additional considerations, provide flexibility for work arrangements. And I wanted to ask you if you see remote work as also a tool for recruitment and retention. And I ask because we've had this debate in Anchorage. The prior administration allowed quite a lot of remote work. the new mayor came in and basically got rid of a lot of the remote work options, and it created quite a lot of consternation amongst our employees. And so I'm sort of curious to hear your thoughts on remote work. Is it an effective thing you can offer in recruitment retention, or do you think it's a separate kind of issue? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Nice to see you as well. Through the chair, I think it's one of the most effective things we could be doing. And it's probably one of the most cost-effective things we could be doing. It didn't make my list of 9 strategies because based on time constraints, I felt like it needed more work. So I think we experienced, as many employers did in the pandemic, we really quickly moved to flexibility in work scheduling and work location. To be honest, I think it had some pros and cons, and I do believe it's an effective tool. I think it is one of the most effective. It's just one that we needed to develop further before I felt comfortable rolling it out. And I think the other reason I didn't, because we do kind of allow it right now on an ad hoc basis. So we just had to, essentially a 4-10 schedule. And I just worked with that department manager to authorize that and set that up. We've got a different department that alternates between summer and winter by changing their hours. So I think it's going to be something that we have to figure out. And it just requires us to develop more capacity in-house to make some of those hard decisions about when is it the right position? How do we evaluate whether it's working or not? To be continued for sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dunbar, Senator Bishop has a question.
Thank you. Good afternoon. And I have 2 questions, and I'll just put it all in my question to you, and you can answer back. But do you do exit surveys? And if you do, is there a trend in the exit surveys why people are leaving the department? And lastly, is there good child care available in your area for single working parents?
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Through the chair, we do not do as consistently as we should. So we do them, but they're, I would say, infrequent, and we could gain a lot better information by formalizing that. So that's something that we should look at doing better. Childcare is challenging, and I would say that we probably don't have as much childcare as our community requires. Childcare was the one need that was amplified during the pandemic that any amount of money, the CARES funds we had, we could not figure out how to address. So I think that childcare is a very real issue and will continue to impact people's ability to be in the workforce, unfortunately.
Thank you. Please continue.
All right, thank you. I'm getting to the end of my presentation. I added this slide, these additional considerations. These are not so much strategies about how do we make ourselves more competitive. These are more in line with thinking of how do we maintain the level of services that are required when we are understaffed or when things get bumpy. And we've had some success on small scale. I know you're going to hear from Mr. Eubank in a second, but several years ago, the cities of Kenai and Soldotna partnered on delivering animal control services. So we've got an interagency agreement now to do that. And that might be something that municipalities have to think through moving forward. Those are challenging. They require a lot of trust. They require political will on both sides. But that's something that we might need to think about moving forward if we're understaffed in areas. As well as mutual aid agreements. Those would be more kind of on an emergency basis. But coming together ahead of time is familiar in law enforcement. We recently did one with our utility where we just recognize that if we get in a bind, we're going to help out our neighbors and vice versa. The letting go of old processes, that's a tricky one. I'm a person who has a very high tolerance for change. Guys, that we're good at doing new things. We're not so good at stopping doing old things. So there's a lot of things we're doing at the city that probably are no longer serving our our purposes. And the one I had in mind was just our hiring process. I think it's too slow. It's not agile enough. We're not communicating our information about our community very well. But it's just going to take someone who has capacity and time to dig into that system and try to revamp it. And we're approaching it at a time where not many of our people have that extra capacity right now. And then continuity of operation planning, this would be like worst case scenario. And we had to do this in, you know, in March of 2020. We drafted a continuity of operations plan for what I believe is the first time at the city. And I think that way of thinking can inform moving ahead, thinking about communicating with our elected officials and the community. Are there things that we might have to step away from at certain times? Are there things that we're doing that if we are shorthanded, that we will just have to put a pause on? And it's a place I hope we don't have to get to, but it's helpful, I think, as a manager to be prepared. The next slide, 13, I just didn't want to leave this conversation without recognizing that what I haven't yet talked about is the supply side of the workforce, which is we need to compete not just as employers, but as a community. We're in competition with other communities in the lower 48 or, you know, for people who have mobility where they want to live. And so our investments in economic development and our parks and our communities are really have to be part of the same conversation, I believe. At least in the city of Soldotna, we've considered them hand in hand, that we have a responsibility for our own residents to make the community a place they want to live and grow old and raise their families. But those same things may help us in attracting folks to Alaska or keeping people here or getting our young people to come back after they go get a few years of education experience. So I hope that part of this conversation will continue more broadly in terms of, you know, partnering with our K-12 education, technical schools, our colleges and universities. You know, how do we, instead of fighting amongst ourselves for a limited pool of workers, how do we grow that pool? And I just wanted to recognize that I think investing in our community more broadly is one piece of that puzzle. And for my last slide, I'll just wrap it up and say, you know, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak about our community and what are some of the things we're thinking about. I'm glad that you're involving local government in this conversation. I appreciate that because I think ultimately we are all good outcomes for our residents, for our communities. And just again, thank you for inviting me.
Senator Bishop has a question for you.
Thank you again for the presentation. I've got just an editorial and then one real serious question. And it's not lost on me that it looks like, you know, two of your employees here have got over 50 years experience and they're retiring, but it appears that they both are in a defined benefit plan. Is that correct? Your police?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, our current longest running employee is at 45 years. And so, yes, he's in tier one of the benefit system.
Thank you. And, you know, and to your third bullet on your page 13, support the other employers and their recruitment efforts. And this is the serious question. Is the Dairy Queen still open in Soldotna?
Thank you for that question through the chair. Yes, the Dairy Queen in Soldotna is still open. I thought we were going to have the last Blockbuster in the nation. Ultimately, we missed out on that opportunity, but the Dairy Queen is alive and well.
Very good. Thank you.
Senator Gray Jackson has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, thank you for this presentation on your community. It looks like a wonderful place, and unfortunately, I've never been, but I plan to visit. So my question is, what is the cultural diversity within your community? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson, through the chair. I think that Soldotna views itself as slightly progressive and welcoming and diverse. We're really trying from a cultural perspective to even broaden the offerings that are here. So that slide that showed the music, that's our Music in the Park. That's a picture of a Wednesday in Soldotna, and any Wednesday from June through August that is sunny will look like that. And that performer, he was part of a hip hop duo with a harpist that's from Philadelphia, but I didn't get to see that performance, but they came and performed in our park. So I think diversity wise in terms of statistics, we're probably similar to the rest of the urban areas near us in the state, but I hope that we're viewed as a welcoming, progressive, forward-thinking municipality.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Queen. You mentioned when you were discussing SBS and Social Security with Senator Merrick that the city had not opted into those programs in the decades in which they were offered, the 70s and before. In your experience, would it be your opinion that the city did not opt into those programs because there was a defined benefit option that was available to employees that the state provided?
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. It's an excellent question. Unfortunately, I don't feel like I can adequately speak to that. The only anecdote I'm aware of is that it had been considered in the past, but I don't have a fair understanding of why that idea was either supported or not at the time.
Very good. And so as the state continues to kind of grapple with this issue of what to do surrounding retirement benefits, if municipalities like yours were no longer required to contribute 22% for the cost of every PERS employee to a pension system that no longer is getting new participants, would that free up additional resources in your municipality to offer retirement benefits to your employees?
Thank you. Absolutely. So that is a resounding yes. Now, as we transition towards our workforce being entirely in tier four of the system, it's somewhat difficult as an employer, through no fault of any of ours, to see those investments that we're making not being able to be serving the employees that we have right now. So we're in a healthy financial position at the city, and fortunately, we have an opportunity to look into some of these issues. But if we did not have the level of unfunded liability, you know, those payments right now or ongoing or at some point in the future, if they were reduced, absolutely we could invest more in our current workforce and attracting the workforce for the years ahead.
Very good. And so then if the state could create a system that reduced the unfunded liability to you and supported future retirements, would that be something that you could take a look at and support?
Thank you. We would be thrilled to look into any of the proposals. I think that the details would really matter, but we could take a assessment of any proposal moving forward and see how that would apply to our situation, really start looking at the numbers. We'd be interested in doing that.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any further questions for Ms. Queen? Seeing none, thank you very much, Stephanie, for being with us today here in Center at Labor and Commerce. We'll take a brief at ease while we switch presenters. We're back on the record. Next up, we have Mr. Terry Eubank of Kenai. Mr. Eubank, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Terry Eubank. I am the city manager for the city of Kenai.
Very good. And would you prefer that we ask questions as you go through your presentation or wait till the end?
I would leave that to the discretion of the chair. I'm happy to answer questions during the presentation or wait till the end.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eubank. Please begin your presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, senators. My name is Terry Eubank. I am the city manager for the city of Kenai. I've been the city's manager since January. But previously, I served as the city's finance director for the last 14 and a half years. In total, I have over 25 years of municipal finance and management experience in Alaska. And it's my privilege to speak with you today regarding workforce challenges facing the city of Kenai and local governments in Alaska. In my 25-year career, I have not seen the magnitude of workforce challenges currently facing local governments. Significant challenges include the recruitment and retention of qualified employees, a workforce that is demanding greater flexibility in working hours and ability to work remotely, a legal and regulatory environment which limits the ability to adjust personnel resources in response to changing work environments, escalating and unsustainable growth in employee healthcare costs, and inflation levels that have not been seen in more than 40 years. What are the recruitment and retention issues being faced by the city and local governments? In the past 5 years, the number of City of Kenai recruitments has increased by 40%. The number of applicants for those positions has decreased by 65% to an average of 9 per position, with many of our positions receiving 0 to 4 applications. 33% of city directors positions filled in the last 5 years have been filled with individuals from outside of Alaska, including 3 of the last 5 director hires. 78% of our PERS eligible employees are currently Tier 4 participants, and that number is projected to grow to 92% over the next 5 years. Many of our employees indicate the choice to leave the employment of the city is impacted by the lack of value they see in the current PERS Tier 4 retirement system. Fewer applicants for our positions meet the minimum job qualifications of those positions. In the next 5 years, we estimate 20% of city employees are eligible and plan to retire. Our positions are vacant for longer periods of time. While being the city's city manager, I'm also the acting finance director. The assistant to the city manager is the acting human resources director. We are currently interviewing for the human resources director position, but are on the second recruitment for a finance director. This is a position with a salary range between $111,000 and $146,000 annually. That position closes this Friday, and currently there are no applicants for that position. When we talk about work environment and flexibility, there has been an increase in employee and potential employee requests for flexible work hours and the ability to work remotely, with more requests expected on the horizon. Remote work and flexible hours is challenging traditional work models and creating unique challenges for employers. Workers' compensation is challenging for remote workers. What is covered when working from home? Remote workers working in other states or even other countries must comply with the workers' compensation laws there, despite the employer being located in Alaska. Alaska's employers must learn to abide by the employment tax laws where employees live and work, and not those within Alaska. Remote workers expect reimbursement for home offices they are providing. While the City of Kenai employees are unrepresented, many municipal governments who have represented employees are finding their collective bargaining agreements potentially unenforceable when employees reside and work outside of Alaska. Legal and regulatory challenges are facing a variety, local governments are facing a variety of legal and regulatory challenges, including the cost to local governments to restructure personnel resources due to PERS termination studies, the cost of the study, the one-time cost of eliminating classes of employees, and the ongoing cost until the PERS unfunded liability is eliminated, even when there is no decrease in the employer's covered payroll. There are limitations on our ability to hire temporary or rehire PERS retired employees to fill temporary vacancies. The Affordable Care Act requirements to provide health insurance to part-time and temporary employees who work a prescribed number of hours in a 12-month period. Employers are being forced to choose between ending employment for these employees or providing health care, when health care is the single most expensive benefit local government employers. Talking about health care, employee health care costs are second only to salaries in personnel costs at the city. Employee health care costs are 18.6% of our total personnel costs and 14% of total expenditures for the city's general fund. The city of Kenai currently pays 87% of the cost of the cost for employees and employee dependent health care. Since FY 2010, the city's health insurance premiums have increased an average of 9.6% annually, despite cost saving benefit changes and two insurance provider switches by the city. When we talk about inflationary pressures, inflation in the country and Alaska is at levels not seen in 4 years. Businesses, local governments, and their employees are facing escalating costs for goods and services. Inflation, as measured by the change in the annual Anchorage Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers, was 4.88% for 2021 and 8.11% for 2022. Municipal revenue growth rates are slower than the rate of growth in expenditures for personnel, goods, and services. Municipalities will be faced with reduction in services, reduction in capital spending, or increased taxes and fees at a time when citizens are also feeling the impacts of inflation. Many municipal governments are dependent upon sales tax as its major revenue source, and the city of Kenai is no different, where 56% of general fund revenues are from sales tax. Sales tax growth is now below the growth of inflation and likely to remain muted as recession concerns rise for the nation's economy. Municipal property tax values, despite a real estate market that produced bidding wars on houses locally, are not showing significant growth. The lack of a mandatory disclosure of real estate sales hampers the efforts of assessors. Assessors are forced to make market value adjustments with limited information. Lack of information causes delay in adjusting assessments to the full and true value as required by Alaska statute, but it also often leads to inequitable distribution of tax burden to taxpayers where greater information is available. Municipal sales tax and property tax revenues are not necessarily workforce challenges, but do certainly impact the local government's ability to increase pay and benefits to employees during these challenging times. What are some ideas and solutions? I can propose some ideas for sure. The solutions to these problems are going to require creative ideas and stretch traditional thinking. The following ideas are mine and do not necessarily reflect the position of the city of Kenai. Regarding healthcare, we should reconsider the 80th percentile rule, which many believe contributes to increased healthcare costs in the state. In 2004, the Alaska Division of Insurance adopted what's known as the 80th percentile rule. The rule establishes a minimum of how much health insurance companies have to pay when Alaskans with private insurance plans see doctors or other providers that are outside the insurer's network. The rule applies to all individual plans and most private group plans except for those for self-insured plans. The rule is meant to protect consumers from large bills for out-of-network services by requiring carriers to cover a certain amount. However, there are concerns this rule has contributed to increasing healthcare costs over time. I believe we need to re-examine and potentially reinstate programs to incentivize skilled workers to remain in, to move to, and return to Alaska and work once completing their education and skills training. We need to examine the current PERS and TERS Tier 4 and TERS Tier 3 retirement benefit for improvements and to determine if those systems are meeting its objectives. Employees must find value in this important benefit. We need to enact legislation to lessen the disproportionate burden placed on Alaska's smaller local governments by PERS termination studies. Legislation should provide greater flexibility for local governments to restructure personnel while not lessening the employer's covered payroll, thus causing no harm to the retirement system. We need to review PERS regulations regarding temporary employment and retiring of retired employees to provide more flexibility in times where qualified applicants are limited. Alaskan school districts have the ability to rehire retired teachers within limits during teacher shortages. We need to re-examine workers' compensation laws, focusing on the new challenges posed by remote workers. Despite all of these challenges, we at the City of Kenai remain optimistic. We are a financially strong city that remains an attractive place to work and raise a family. The city has strengths that many Alaskan communities do not have. Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, it has been my pleasure to speak to you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eubank. Are there questions from members of the committee? I have a couple for you, Mr. Eubank. Mr. Eubank, are you aware that there currently is a regulation change out for comment regarding the repeal of the 80th percentile rule?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I did know that some legislation is working in that area, and you know, I don't know the specifics of it, to be honest with you, but I think that's a good step forward.
Very good. Yep. So regulations have been proposed by the Division of Insurance, and they're out for comment. And those regulations would repeal the 80th percentile rule, and more information on that will be forthcoming in coming hearings before this committee. How would the change or potential change to a retirement benefit system for public employees affect your ability to meet your mission at the City of Kenai?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the most important thing is I think one of my closing statements there is that our employees have to find benefit in the retirement system that they're a part of. If they're not seeing the benefit of belonging to that system, our ability to retain them long term is significantly diminished. So no matter what the changes need to be, whether that's a new tier that is a defined benefit plan or something else or enhancements to the current defined contribution plan, employees have to start finding value in that. Senator Bishop asked the question of Ms. Queen about exit interviews. We do exit interviews. They're absolutely voluntary by the employee, but we are one of the major comments we're seeing by departing employees is that they don't see value in the defined contribution retirement system.
And then to that end, Mr. Eubank, are they choosing careers or choosing, you know, different places to live and work that do offer a defined benefit retirement program?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think in some cases, I think those opportunities are rather limited. I know in the past we've lost police officers that have moved out of state to areas in Washington where defined benefit plans were present. But I think people will be looking, and these are the decisions that people will be making.
Very good. And are you seeing lots of movement, lateral movement, similarly with your fire department in Kenai as well?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, our fire department has been pretty stable at the City of Kenai. Unlike Ms. Queen, we went through a period probably in the last 5 years where until this last year, our police department wasn't fully staffed, for a variety of reasons, because of retiring individuals, individuals moving out of state, individuals leaving that profession. But certainly I think the most difficulty we see in positions at the City of Kenai revolve around our police department and our public works department, the same water and sewer issues that Ms. Queen spoke to, the city of Kenai is experiencing those as well.
Very good. And is there one thing or maybe a couple of things specifically that you could point to with your public works folks about why they are choosing to move on from city employment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When it comes to our public works folks, I think the supply of licensed people that are licensed is extremely limited, and it really is an employee's market out there. The majority of our employees have left for higher paying positions or advanced positions in other municipalities. They've taken positions on up in the oil field in the North Slope where they need the same certifications that we require in their treatment facilities. So I really think the driving force in water and sewer is about supply. It really is an employee's market out there, not an employer's market right now.
Very good. One last question. So then would you agree then that as far as, you know, a basket of goods that you are offering at the City of Kenai pay and benefits package, that's just not allowing your municipality to compete at a market level for these employees because they are choosing to go other places?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Part of it, I think, is that, we only have it's the structure of our positions. We don't have necessarily openings or vacancies in our lead or our foreman type positions for people to move into. So as they gain experience, they're looking for those opportunities. That's a product of being a small employer. But so I think that's a driving force of what we're doing. But yes, definitely our pay and benefits or our limitations on our ability to pay is being hampered. I can tell you this year for fiscal year 23, the city of Kenai provided its employees a 6.35% salary adjustment. It's the largest salary adjustment to the base salary schedule in my experience in 25 years I've been doing this in Alaskan government finance. For us to come back this year and be able to meet an 8.11% annual cost of living would cost the city of Kenai nearly $900,000 in our general fund. That's almost a 1 mil equivalence on all of our property taxes. The pressures that are being placed so that we can stay competitive in recruitment and retention are pretty significant right now. And we're doing everything we can, just like the city of Soldotna, to examine all of our offerings to employees. Like the city of Soldotna, we do not participate in Social Security. That was a conscious decision by the city of Kenai and anybody who's not in Social Security. The requirement in order to do that is that you are under a qualified retirement plan, which PERS provides. So that was a conscious decision by the city at some point in time. We do also not participate in the state SBS program. We do provide a minimal match. We match 4% of the first $37,500 of employees' wages into a 401 program. So the maximum employer contribution annually is $1,500. That is absolutely something we're looking at, expanding the amount to provide a little bit more match. But we're certainly nowhere in the same, at the same level as the state SBS program.
Very good. Other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Eubank, thank you very much for coming to visit us here at Senate Labor and Commerce. Have a great day.
Thank you, sir.
We'll take a brief at ease while we switch presenters. And we're back on the record. It's 2:35. Joining us now from the beautiful and welcoming city of Juneau, Mr. Jeff Rogers. Mr. Rogers, would you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Rogers. I'm the finance director here at the City and Borough of Juneau. I'd be remiss not to welcome you here. Thank you for being here in Juneau's capital city. If there's anything that we can at City Hall do to make your time in Juneau more comfortable, let me know. More snow at Eagle Crest is not in my power, but thank you for being here. It's really an honor to have you arrive every January, so thank you. Be remiss not to acknowledge that we are on the traditional homelands of the Tlingit people. Thank you to the Akwan who've cared for this place for a very long time. Just by way of scale, City and Borough of Juneau is 1,900 FTEs, almost 2,500 people in some form of city government, and that is roughly in thirds. About a third of those people work for the City and Borough of Juneau proper, about a third work for Bartlett Regional Hospital, about a third work for the school district. About $400 million a year is City and Borough of Juneau scale. I'm going to talk today just about our experience, what it's like really trying to recruit people. I manage a fairly large department. I'm always trying to recruit people, but I hear and pay attention to a lot about what's going on across CBJ. These are the big rocks, right? The affordability and availability of both housing and childcare are really significant in Juneau. I think I could probably represent that the need for childcare is severe throughout the state. Obviously, in Juneau, we have an intense housing crunch that makes housing both hard to find and costly when you can. We face competition from other employers, from employee retirement benefits that people that are richer or that people perceive to be richer. We're seeing hiring bonuses really from every corner, as well as retention bonuses. And also a real demonstrated desire on behalf of candidates for flexible workplaces. And I say flexible, I think I mean telework and remote work, but the definition of flexibility changes a little bit every day, and people are looking for slightly different accommodations. Mr. Chair, I think folks can interrupt me whenever you're ready for that.
Excellent.
Here are some of the things that we've done specifically on housing and childcare, a little outside the normal stream of thought with employee recruitment and retention. We have borough-wide property tax abatement for qualifying new multifamily housing developments. That means that if you're building a housing development in Juneau right now that is four or more units and 75% of the density of that particular zoning, you're not going to pay property tax for 12 years. We are doing everything we can to incentivize housing. We've made multi-million dollar investments in grants and loans to both nonprofit and for-profit housing developers to build new housing in Juneau. We see that program working now. The Assembly, CBJ Assembly, put $5 million into a fund for that program. We're spending on average now about $800,000 a year in grants and loans to spark housing developments here in Juneau. We directly subsidize child care provision. We've been doing that now for 3 years. The program has grown. In the current year, we subsidize childcare in Juneau directly to the tune of about $1 million a year. Next year, it'll be about $1.5 million. That's a subsidy that goes directly to childcare providers that incentivizes providers to be in the business and give them the ability to be profitable at rates that parents can afford to pay.
Senator Merrick has a question.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. Thank you so much for being here. I was born and raised here in Juneau, and I'm very familiar with the housing shortage. I'm curious, is there a lack of land as well, or is it just buildings?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Merrick. Through the chair, it's a little all above. I mean, look out the window. You're not building a house up there. The City and Borough of Juneau just published a map of all the vacant and underdeveloped land in the borough, and that map, I think, has been a rallying point for people to say, there is some developable land. The question is, how do we gain access to it? And is it profitable either for a nonprofit developer or a for-profit developer to get access to and build housing? I'm certainly no expert on what it takes to develop housing. But we are doing everything we can as a borough to say there is some amount of flat developable land. The city and borough of Juneau itself has been developing an area of land called Peterson Hill, which is sort of in the center of the valley near Auk Lake. We developed the first phase of that project. We're looking for partners, both for-profit and nonprofit, to finish developing what will eventually be many hundreds of homes in a neighborhood.
Great. Thank you very much.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just because we're on the topic of housing, and my colleague Senator Merrick asked one, I'd like to ask a follow-up. So hopefully I'll be putting forward legislation pretty soon that gives local governments a little bit more flexibility when it comes to property tax abatement and also dealing with blighted properties. And so my two questions for you are, one, when private or public subsidized projects try to build multifamily housing, to what degree are you encountering resistance from neighborhoods, to some of those projects? And then two, do you see statutory or regulatory barriers to building that you think that we could impact here at the state, or are they primarily at the local level?
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Through the chair, it's certainly not my expertise to talk about housing. I think in Juneau we see and feel relatively little resistance to the housing development. We do occasionally see some resistance from neighborhoods when we talk about housing developments that will be tailored toward low-income people. That's a bit of a neighborhood challenge sometimes when you talk about low-income housing. But generally speaking, people in Juneau, I think, recognize that people need homes here. I mean, they've got their friends and their kids and others who can't find places to live. So I think generally speaking, there's openness to housing everywhere. The regulatory barriers, I'm just not the expert. I think there's lots of challenges to building housing in a place like Juneau. I can sit here today and talk to you about the tools that we as a municipality are trying to exert on that question and move the needle. I'm just not familiar with what the things are the state could be doing. At the end of the day, I don't necessarily think that state regulation is what's stopping housing in Juneau.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bishop.
Just along those lines, the housing shortage is not just isolated to here, right? It's kind of a statewide issue, but you know, for us, we have a little challenge in Fairbanks with F-35s and housing for pilots and support staff. And I'm sitting here listening to Senator Sullivan's speech and 200 people coming in here to support an icebreaker. Where are we going to put them? And then still try to fill the gaps on housing and child care here in Juneau. You just got a tall order in front of you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. I don't know that you were looking for a response,
no,
but I think those comments are totally appropriate.
Well, I'm sure you guys are burning the midnight oil down there figuring that one out.
Let me turn to some of the things that we are doing in terms of workforce development. These are three things that are all moving forward. The Assembly has voted these in the affirmative, and they are not necessarily yet implemented, but they will be implemented in the coming months. First is a dependent care assistance program, $5,000 per employee per year after an employee served a year. No employee contribution required. That money will work a lot like a health savings account. Employees will be able to tap it directly for eligible child care and other dependent care expenses, $5,000 a year. One of the things that we like about the dependent care assistance program is that it disproportionately benefits lower wage workers. Anytime you have a monetary benefit that's not a percentage of something else, you know, when we've got an office assistant or somebody who might be making as little as $40,000 a year, they're eligible for that same $5,000 a year child care. Hiring bonuses. We do not at CBJ today have a hiring bonus program. We have a retention program for public safety, certain public safety employees. We just are in the process. We have been authorized to initiate a hiring bonus program up to $40,000 per challenging to fill position. I don't know that we'll see very many $40,000 hiring bonuses, but I think that we will see hiring bonuses in amounts that make difficult to fill positions attractive. Mirror the comments from my colleagues on the Kenai. We're really talking about police officers, equipment operators, certain other high-skill professionals. It's a little bit of everything, but certainly public safety officers and equipment operators are just some of the most challenging in this environment. We also have assembly approval to institute an employer match to our 457 program. We have a robust and well-utilized 457 program. And the one twist that we've discussed and come to a decision about is that we will offer an employer match to employee contributions only for Tier 4 employees. We've talked a lot about this. I don't know that Tier 1 through 3 employees will be thrilled about this, but I also think that they recognize that the people who have come after them have an employment benefit that is not as rich as theirs. They recognize, I mean, certainly talk to a police officer who's Tier 3 working 20 or 30 hours a week of overtime because you can't hire a partner for that individual. They're supportive of anything we can do to incentivize Tier 4 employees to work for the city and borough of Juneau. So the plan that we're designing is a 50% match, 50 cents on the dollar to employee contributions at maximums of 1%, 2%, 3%, 4% of annual wages. So what that means is that at 10 years of service, an employee would be eligible for a match up to 4% of their wages. So a $100,000 a year employee, if they were contributing $8,000 of their own money in a voluntary way, they would be eligible for up to $4,000 of CBJ match into that deferred compensation program, subject to a five-year vesting schedule like PERS Tier 4. This is certainly the largest monetary thing that we're going to do in an effort to one of the things that we recognize is that Tier 4 creates a five-year cliff or a five-year window or a five-year door, right? So once employees get to 5 years, they're fully vested in Tier 4, they become totally portable. They lose nothing by moving from us to another employer. This is structured out to 10 years of service in an effort to try to carve off that cliff, right? And at some point give employees in Tier 4 an incentive to stay beyond 5 years.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your presentation. So with that hiring bonus, is there any stipulation on how long they need to stay employed in order to qualify for that bonus? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Through the chair, there is. I was actually in a meeting yesterday working on some policy on this question, trying to figure out if you need to stay 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. The retention bonuses that CBJ uses with public safety officers today is that you get a retention bonus on a certain year. You have to work 4 more years to keep that entire retention bonuses. After 4 years, you're eligible for another one. You've got to work another 4 years. So it's a carrot approach to get people to stay in the system. I would expect we will do something similar with hiring bonuses. There's a lot of technicalities, and people leave city employment for brief periods of time. They come back, they take promotions, they take laterals. We have to figure all of that out.
Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman, and Mr. Rogers, thank you. I appreciate that the CBNJ is trying to come up with some solutions to this problem, and unfortunately, all these solutions cost money. Are you having to raise revenues to cover these different programs?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Merrick. I through the chair, I think there's two answers to that question. One, which is that one is that employee turnover is very expensive, especially when we look at police officers, what it costs to send somebody to the academy, both in terms of the cost of the academy and the time that we pay them to be at the academy. Turnover with positions is just very costly. Even turnover with non-public safety positions costs us institutional knowledge. It causes us to be less efficient. So turnover is expensive. We and Juneau have been very fortunate in recent years to have robust revenue. We've done, property value in Juneau continues to grow apace. Sales tax revenue continues to grow similarly. We have weathered the pandemic, and we will now expect a record cruise season this summer. Cruise tourism is a big part of our annual yearly economy. We expect that those things will do well. There's a ton of demands on city revenue right now, but the revenue picture itself is strong.
Thank you.
So some non-monetary things that we're working on sort of in the range of flexibility, we have now signed and implemented a hybrid and remote work policy. We, like many employers, lived in a nebulous kind of environment with a lot of ad hoc solutions on telework. We now have a defined policy that allows for 2 days of telework, meaning you're at home working from home 2 days a week, you're in the office 3 days a week, and up to 2 weeks per year of fully remote work. That means if you can work successfully from Hawaii for 2 weeks, then that is in our policy for you to do, so long as you can do your work there and your supervisor approves it. These are eligible positions only. Obviously, there's one of the challenges that when you're a municipality with hybrid and remote work, it's just a sense about equity. Police officers, firefighters don't get to work from home. We, as a municipality, have recognized a need to allow those employees who can work from home to do so. A lot of provisions built in, supervisory approval, adequate performance, all those sorts of things. We are in the process of finalizing an alternate work week policy. The state has a similar policy already that allows employees to work a nine-workday on a biweekly schedule. That means you have a regular day off every Friday or Monday, however you think about it. The same policy would allow for a 4-10 work schedule inside of a week. Also, an infants in the workplace policy, which we are in the process of finalizing now, which allows young parents to have an infant under 6 months of age in the office with them. There's a process where they meet with the supervisor and HR to develop a plan for how that's going to work. But babies are welcome in the workplace at CBJ, so we're really trying to make it possible. There's a lot of what we have done that is specifically directed at getting caregivers back into the workplace. The dependent care assistance program, the infants in the workplace, and the flexible work schedule, all really targeted at getting caregivers back into the workforce. My colleagues spoke about just demographic trends. One of the demographic trends is that during the pandemic, a lot of caregivers were two caregivers in a household may have worked. Now we have one of those caregivers working in the workforce. It means we've lost a lot of people who were working, who might want to work again if they could provide for their families. And then the very last slide here, just other things that are on our mind. We haven't necessarily, well, we've moved on some of these actually. Just talking about how we develop employees, how we move employees and promote them and train them. Just how we market job opportunities. We finally kind of coming into the modern age and using an online recruitment hiring platform like the state does, like many of our peers do. Talking a little bit now about retention bonuses. We have retention bonuses for police officers. We don't have them anywhere else at CBJ. I think we're going to think about that. It might be position specific. It might be department specific. Student loan assistance and tuition reimbursement, things that we get requests for very commonly from employees, kind of try to weigh the value of those. Some of the challenge with some of these types of benefits is that they benefit a specific sliver, and it's hard to know how to offer similar benefits or comparable benefits to other people not in that circumstance. Pets in the workplace, a funny subject. We've all kind of dealt with it about whether or not it's a good dog or a bad dog in the office, but people like having their pets. People who work from home for a long time got used to having their pets at their feet. And I think it becomes a serious thing. People want a dog at their feet and that dog's well-behaved. I think we might think that's okay. And then, you know, we just think a lot about how we stack up to private employers. And let me tell you, municipalities don't throw fancy cocktail parties for their employees. And sometimes we feel it. You know, sometimes we recognize that environment, that celebratory environment that can come with private industry, we don't have. And we have to think about what we might do. Certainly we have lots of potlucks and little parties at work, but there's nothing quite like perks that come with private employment. So all those things remain on our mind. We're going to do everything we can at the local level to hire the best people we can to accommodate your stay here in Juneau. So help us do that if you can, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Jeff, thank you for joining us here today at Senate Labor and Commerce. I'm wondering, as we continue to talk about workforce challenges and certainly lots of conversations regarding changes to the retirement benefit system for public employees, how would a change at the state level offered to your municipality impact the ability for the city and borough of Juneau to meet its mission?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I can only speculate that if there were a defined benefit retirement option available to employees, many employees would take it. Many employees would find it to be valuable. You know, without passing judgment on anything that's in front of the legislature today, a defined benefit plan specifically for public safety individuals doesn't help plow our roads, doesn't help educate our kids, doesn't help clean out the sewer pipe. So I would encourage the legislature and I would encourage the state to be broad and inclusive in its thinking about a retirement system that works for all the municipal employees who keep the place running and keep the lights on. Certainly, I recognize we face most stiff competition for police and fire in terms of retirement benefits, but really the challenges we see with recruitment and retention are in all job classes.
Very good. Thank you very much for joining us today at Senate Labor and Commerce.
Yep. Thank you very much.
The committee will meet again on Friday. Hear from Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing with the Department of Commerce. As there is no further business to come before this committee, this meeting is adjourned at 2:56 p.m.